the show. You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 53. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. Year two of the John of All Trades podcast begins now, and we kick it off with a bang. It's kind of a first-time return, in a manner of speaking, here on the podcast. We featured Renegade Brewing way back on episode 15. I talked to Brett Zardy, their assistant brewer. At the time, he was the assistant brewer. What's he up to now? You'll have to tune into this episode to find out. But this week, on episode 53, we've got the founder. We've got the head honcho. We've got the man in charge. It's Brian O'Connell. He joins us here on the podcast, and we talk about a number of issues related to craft beer. It's a really, really great episode. And as I was booking this interview, I did not realize Brian had recently done the Welcome to Denver podcast with Corey Healy. Great job on that podcast, by the way. Corey does a wonderful job. It's a great show. You should check it out. It's Welcome to Denver. Go search for it. It's part of the Sexpot comedy group, which Sexpot just does exceptional work. They've got a great stable of podcasts. Check it out. But I listened to Brian and I go, shit. This is very similar to the interview I was planning on conducting. So what I did was I listened to it and I made sure to go in a different direction. I made sure we covered some different things that you weren't going to hear on the Welcome to Denver podcast. So I asked him about some of the issues associated with craft beer, such as it grows, how do you keep the spirit of collaboration going? How do you keep that cool vibe where everyone's friendly and everyone's helping each other and things like Collaboration Fest, which, by the way, it behooves me to mention that this week is Colorado Craft Beer Week. So be sure to check that out. Just search for Colorado Craft Beer Week. You'll find it. There will be a link on the Colorado Brewers Guild. And Brian refers to the Brewers Guild quite a bit. We have a very strong guild in Colorado. I didn't know that. And if you're part of the guild, you're part of the family. So we talk about that. We also talk about, so the spirit of being local is really important. You know, hey, we're your neighborhood brewery. But Renegade just recently expanded into Kansas and also Nebraska. And I asked him, how do you maintain that same type of vibe, that same type of spirit, that same energy? And I found his answer pretty interesting. So we naturally talk about his response to the Budweiser ad from the Super Bowl, his letter that he wrote in response to that got great traction. It was picked up all over the place, well beyond Colorado's borders from what he tells me. We talk about buyouts. We talk about exit strategies. We talk full strength beer sales in grocery stores and convenience stores. Why might that not be a good thing? Brian has a good answer for that. It's something I happen to believe very strongly. And we talk at length about that. We also talk about styles. There's a lot going on this podcast, so it's really a cool way to kick off year two, and I'm just very pleased to be able to feature Renegade Brewing again. They brew offensively delicious beers. That's their tagline. They talk about doing the don't, where they take classic styles and they put their own spin on them. They just recently released their Imperial Pilsner, which I will tell you, I went to their tap room on Saturday. We had some friends in from out of town. We were showing them some breweries around Denver. And naturally, Renegade was one of the stops. So, had the Imperial Pilsner for the first time. It's excellent. It's really, really good. I was so happy to finally get to have it. And I was happy Renegade brewed a Pilsner, too. It's an Imperial Pilsner, which means it's kind of dangerous because it's really clean, really refreshing, really sort of smooth tasting, very crisp. But 8% alcohol. Good Lord, right? You're going, man, I could drink 100 of these. Better make it 50 because that alcohol profile is a little high. But that's Renegade. They're offensively delicious. So head down to their tap room. I'll have links on the website to their Facebook page, to their homepage, to the letters that Brian has written. He's getting much more active in social media. And we talk about that. We talk about being more outspoken and how his role as the founder of Renegade influences that. So great episode coming your way. If you're listening to us on iTunes, thank you very much. If you're listening to us on Stitcher, thank you very much. Please give us a rating. Please give us a review. Those things help as they calculate the algorithm for John of All Trades. Also, like us on Facebook, J-O-A-T Pod. Follow us on Twitter, J-O-A-T Pod. And the homepage is, as always, John of All Trades. That's J-O-N of All Trades.us. Let's get to Brian O'Connell. He is the guest on episode 53 of the John of All Trades podcast, and his interview starts right now.
I'm drinking the Hiatus, which is our cold coffee-infused oatmeal ale.
Yeah, I dig that one a lot. You guys just recently released the pills, right? How did that go?
Awesome. You know, it's kind of in the process of release right now. So we released it at our tap room, and then we did an event down at Asbury Provisions.
Right.
And, but it's actually not on liquor store shelves yet. It just went to our distributor yesterday.
Okay.
Really, the big release getting out on shelves will happen Monday, Tuesday next week.
Okay. So there's a great liquor store by me called Grape Expectations.
Oh, yeah. That is a good store.
Yeah. Those guys know what they're doing. And do you guys ever do tastings there?
You know, I'm not sure if we've done one there or not. Some stores have the tasting license and some don't. If they have one, I'm sure we have.
Okay. Yeah, I know. It's because every Friday they do different tastings.
Okay, I'm sure we've done one there then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might be time to do a new one because that's my neighborhood liquor store. So personal bias, you know, that's the way it goes. But sitting here with Brian O'Connell of Renegade Brewing, thanks for taking some time. I know you've got to be just up to your ass in alligators.
Yeah, I keep pretty busy.
Yeah, most definitely. And we're sitting here in your new production facility. How long has this place been open?
It's been running for about 2.5 months now.
Okay, and how's it been going?
Good, really good. We're finally to a point where we've used all of the machines enough now that we know how they work, and we're not having as many issues as we did the first couple weeks. You know, the first time you do something, it's always a little slower and more cumbersome than you'd like it to be, but things are running really well now.
Well, yeah, it seems like, because this is a follow-up to an episode I did with one of your co-head brewers.
Yeah, so Brett, he's actually kind of transitioning his role since you spoke with him, and
he was assistant brewer when I talked to him.
Right. So now Brett is actually in the process of training up to be the production manager, and by this summer he'll be fully trained and he'll be the production manager for the whole brewery. So
wow, that's cool. What does that entail?
Basically, the production manager is responsible for the flow of the entire process on the floor. So scheduling the brewing, all of the cellaring tasks, all the packaging tasks, making sure that the beer gets on the right truck at the right time and goes to the right distributor. And, it's really, you know, kind of everything that happens out on the production floor, the production manager is responsible for.
Wow. It's a big job.
It's a big job. Yep.
When I talked to him, one of the things I was struck by was your guys' overall philosophy of doing the don't, which also shows up in your tagline of offensively delicious. And I should note that I also listened to you on Welcome to Denver. I thought that was an awesome interview you did with Corey.
Thank you.
So I'm curious, were you drawn to that approach because you wanted to push boundaries in terms of flavor, or was it more of a branding proposition, or was it both?
You know, I think it started as the way I think about beer, and it's also really my personality. You know, offensively delicious is our slogan, and that really came from kind of the way that I am. I'm a pretty direct person.
Right.
I have a pretty direct personality. I pretty much always say what I'm thinking, for better or worse.
Good.
I think I just take that approach with beer too, of putting out beer styles that can be a little bit challenging for some people, but ultimately that's what I want to make, and that's how I want the company represented.
I think you've done that successfully. It's got to be a little bit tough sometimes if you get like a new consumer and they're looking for a specific style of beer and you go, well, this is our take on the style. Like, for instance, I'm drinking a Consilium, and you mentioned that is a pale ale with milk sugar in it.
Right.
And so is that tough to overcome when you're approaching sort of a new customer?
Yeah, it certainly can be. You know, I have that conversation with my staff. You know, we could go out and make the styles that are easily recognizable and try to sell those. Or we could go out and make something unique and try to push craft forward. And, you know, when I hear from my staff, oh, sometimes it's hard to explain why there's milk sugar in a pale ale, or what a triple IPA is, or what cold coffee infused oatmeal ale is, or, you know, any number of beers that we make. My response is always, well, 20, 25 years ago, Kim Jordan and Doug Odell had to go out and explain what an IPA and a stout was.
Right.
And we don't have to do that anymore because they did it for us. And now we can go out and sell those styles quite easily. But now it's our turn to go out and be inventive and make something new and exciting and do some hard work and explain to people why it's a good idea and why they should drink it.
Yeah, just get them over the hump, right?
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of the work of craft brewing, sort of the movement, if you want to call it that, has laid a lot of the groundwork. So you're just pushing it to the next level.
Right.
Which I think is really interesting. The biggest challenge you faced in starting this, because you started this in what, 11 or so?
Yes.
Okay. What was your biggest challenge starting then? And compare that to what is your biggest challenge now?
Gosh, what wasn't a challenge starting?
Right.
It was, you know, I mean, at first it was just getting enough money to get going. And then once we opened the doors, it was a completely brand new thing to me. I didn't work in beer before. So
what were you doing before?
I was a researcher at the University of Colorado.
What were you researching?
I did institutional research. So it's essentially analysis of their internal data for policy purposes or okay. for government reporting or whatever.
Right. I mean, it's a research one institution.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a master's degree in communication from Colorado State.
Mm-hmm.
And so your professors end up doing a lot of research. Were you supporting them or was it more on the institutional side?
Institutional side.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep. Yep. Right. And so, you know, basically when I started, everything was brand new to me. I was a home brewer, but learning how to brew on a full production scale and run a business. I'd never run a business before. Just all of that at once was quite a challenge. And I worked for the first 6 months, I worked 90 to 100 hours a week.
Yikes. So what, you know, what is that, like 14 hours a day, 7 days
a week? Absolutely. All I did was wake up, go to work. Most days I ate standing up on my feet. And
damn near slept on your fleet feet, right?
Damn near. When I was done, I crashed. And I did that for about 6 months. And so it's kind of hard to pinpoint one thing and say, boy, that was the biggest challenge. The whole thing was hard. It was just hard. Now I would say the biggest challenge that we had faced recently was really managing the growth, because we were in a much smaller facility. Our growth had really taken off and we were having a hard time getting all of our beers out. And
to what, like keep up with demand?
Keep up with demand and just the way that our production facility was, it wasn't really set up as a production facility. It was more there to support our tap room. And it was hard on the employees to try and put out the volume of beer that we were putting out and just really difficult production-wise to manage that process. Now that we're here, that's really running pretty smoothly. And, you know, I would say our biggest challenge now is that we're kind of taking the step from being a small, mostly taproom-based brewery
right.
up to being a much larger, more production-based brewery. And it's just a different ball game, and there's a lot of things for us to learn. And but it's great. It's new challenges. I always tell people one of my favorite things about my job is that I'm never bored. There's always a new challenge in front of me. And this is just the newest one, is kind of learning, okay, how do we now play on this bigger scale and keep up with the bigger breweries?
Yeah, no, most definitely. One of the things I'm curious about is you mentioned you started in 2011, and I saw a post on your Facebook page about some of the other breweries that started in 2011.
Yep.
So like Wits End and Denver Beer Company and Caution and all breweries that I love.
Right.
And one of the things that's so fun and so appealing about the craft beer industry is that sort of spirit of collaboration. I think you even referred to it as friendship.
Mm-hmm.
How does that mindset continue as you guys fight for tap handles and for, you know, fridge space and counter, or, you know, for space in liquor stores? Or does it continue? And have you seen that erode a little bit?
I think where it used to be every brewery in the country was friends with every other brewery in the country when craft was smaller and there were fewer breweries.
Right.
I think now what you see is more localized friendships. And, you know, certainly everybody in Colorado is friendly, and we have a very strong guild here. And I think it's kind of, you know, if you're part of the Brewers Guild, you're part of the family. Right. You know, I think there's very much that attitude. You know, I think if you're fighting over tap handles or shelf space, you know, you're more likely to maybe push against a out-of-state brewery than your friends down the street. So sure. I think, you know, that kind of mentality is maintaining friendships. Even in a tighter market here in Denver, I know, you know, certainly Renegade has lots of friendships with local breweries, and, you know, so I kind of think that's where it's going, is just in a good way. You know, I think it's not mean-spirited competition in any way, but it's just, you know, hey, Colorado's great, and right. support Colorado and support local. So
yeah, well, I think about something like, we've got Collaboration Fest coming up on Saturday. Unfortunately, this won't air in time, but you guys are a part of that, right?
Yes, we are.
What are you brewing this year for it?
We have two collaborations, one with Sanitas Brewing Company out of Boulder.
Okay.
And that's basically a hoppy saison that we did. Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds all right.
And then we did a collaboration with Caution Brewery out of their brewery in Lakewood. And that one we did kind of a similar, ended up doing a similar style, but a little different. We did a hoppy Belgian Chappelle for that one.
Oh, nice. All right.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
And then another thing I think of is when Vine Street does like the Brewers Olympics or like Stout Month.
Right. Yeah.
Those are all so cool, and it's fun to see, you know, all your favorite breweries at all the places you go around town, all in one place.
Yep.
And trying all those different stouts during February. I mean, that's a month you got to look forward to.
Yeah.
And you guys had Depravity there, right?
We had Depravity there. Yeah, we had Depravity at 3 of their 4 locations, and then at the 4th location we had our Burberry Stout.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yep.
And Burberry is the one made with curry, right?
Yes, it's made with, so essentially it's an imperial oatmeal stout. We add lots of chocolate to it, and then Burberry spice, which is an Ethiopian curry. And it comes off kind of like the, you know, cayenne hot cocoa thing, right, or the Mexican chocolate, you know, but a little bit different because the curry naturally has a little bit different characteristic.
Yeah, flavor profile is a little bit different.
Yep.
Then say, yep, like if you got like a mole stout from Copper Kettle or something, right?
Exactly, yep.
Right, okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. I've always wondered about this.
Like, you see, and then people have to, I make people explain why we put curry in our beer, right?
Right. <You know? laughs> Right. I mean, at the end of the day, we do it because we think it tastes good, right?
That's absolutely right.
But
that's always the answer.
You get to that point. But how do you, can you take me through sort of, okay, I've got an idea, or one of your brewers has an idea and say, hey, I want to do this. What is the process like going from invention or like, hey, I've got this weird idea, right? Like, mm-hmm, let's put curry in a stout.
Right.
What is the process like going from that to it showing up in your tap room?
It happens in different ways. You know, we use our anniversary party a lot as kind of a somewhat of a testing ground for new beers. So our anniversary party, we always put out a bunch of small batch beers, and it's a good time for us to test a bunch at once because we have thousands of people that come to the anniversary party,
right,
and we can really go through a lot of beers on that day and get a lot of feedback. And so, like, for example, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be making a beer that we had at our last anniversary. We call it 5 o'clock in Bangkok.
Okay.
Basically, it's our 5 o'clock, which is our afternoon kind of session beer.
Yeah.
And
is that most comparable to like a golden?
Yeah. Yeah. Golden or a blonde or,
right.
Yep.
Okay.
And so what we do is we put fresh ginger in it and lemongrass.
Oh.
And, so we tested that one out at the anniversary party last year, and it was gone in like 10 minutes. I didn't even get any of it.
That had to be disappointing.
I was very disappointed. And so that was one where we said, all right, we got to do this again. And so we've scaled it up. We're going to do it on our large system here in a couple of weeks.
Nice. Am I crazy, or does that sound like it would be amazing with sushi?
Oh, absolutely.
That sounds outrageously good.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was out in D.C. and I was at the sushi restaurant and I had a Sriracha Ace from Brooklyn.
Oh, that beer is so good.
That beer is crazy good.
Yeah.
And it paired just beautifully with sushi. And I go, wow, saisons and sushi. That's the hot tip for me.
So let me tell you a story about Sriracha Ace. We hold this event during GABF called Offensively Delicious.
Okay.
Which is a beer and comedy event. And basically, we invite 10 breweries, and each brewery has to send a representative up on the stage to do 2 minutes of stand-up.
Okay. Did you go up?
Oh, yeah. I was up there.
How'd you do?
It was fantastic.
Good.
I loved every minute of it.
Did you kill the crowd?
People laughed.
Good, man.
But Brooklyn Brewery was there. We invited them, and they brought cases and cases of Sriracha Ace.
Holy shit.
And so all of the brewery reps who were supposed to go up on stage, we headed backstage, 30 minutes prior to just kind of talk things through and get ready. And the Brooklyn Brewery guys brought back bottles and bottles of Sriracha Ace backstage.
Wow.
So you had a bunch of brewers, each with their own like individual 22-ounce bomber of Sriracha Ace, getting a little liquid courage before we got out on stage. And it works.
Oh, yeah.
So if you ever need a little liquid courage, Sriracha Ace, it's a good one.
That's your jam?
Easy.
Perfect.
Yep.
I want to go back to Depravity a little bit because you guys released that on New Year's.
Yes.
And how many years have you done that now?
Every year since we've been open.
Okay.
So this was our fourth year doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is the profile of that growing or am I imagining things?
So last year, so I've changed the recipe every year up until this year. This year was an exact repeat of last year. So last year I felt like finally got it. This
we nailed
is delicious.
It.
We nailed it. This year, that's somewhat true, a true statement and untrue statement. So the recipe didn't change at all between last year and this year.
Okay.
But our yeast management practices have changed between last year and this year, which have changed the profile of our beers a little bit.
Okay.
Which also impacted Depravity in a very positive way, I think. So yeah, I would say, you know, this year was absolutely the best year for it. It was amazing. And what was great is we made 3 batches of it this year.
Right.
Every year prior to this, we've only made 1 batch. And I like for that beer to last from New Year's to the end of January.
Okay.
And so last year we made 1 batch. It lasted 3 weeks. So this year I said, well, let's make 3 batches and we should be fine.
Right.
It lasted 3 weeks again. So I think everybody agreed with me that this year the beer is really good.
Well, I was there. My wife and I went because, I mean, craft beer, peanut butter cups, that's right in the nexus of, like, that's right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. Who doesn't like peanut butter cups?
Are you kidding me?
That'd be un-American.
That would be horrible.
Yeah.
And if you don't, we're probably not going to be friends.
Yeah, really.
I mean,
clearly you've shown poor judgment. Yeah. I don't want to be around you.
I don't know what choices you've made to lead you to this point.
Yeah.
But I don't care to find out.
No.
But we were there with my 2-month-old daughter and man, it was hopping.
Yeah.
But I, you know, everyone got served. You show up, you're like, "Oh God, I hope they have enough." But it sounds like you guys did really well with it.
Yeah, yeah. We were surprised because we had we normally have a pretty big turnout on New Year's when we release it, but this year was bigger than ever. We actually ended up going through 5 kegs of it that night.
Whoa. Nice.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool.
Quality work.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a beer? Because that one's obviously very popular and, you know, people really look forward to that. That becomes an event. Have you guys done a beer that you or your staff, you know, we pitch it, we like it, it's really good, and it gets out to the tap room and it just falls on its face?
Absolutely.
Yeah? What is that experience like? That's got to be weird because you go, we think this is good, this is really good, and it goes out and you go, whoa, what happened?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think sometimes it's the way that the beer, you know, is named or described, or sometimes, you know, you'll have a beer. I know this has happened to us. Like, I'll have a beer scheduled and we don't get to it right when we originally had it scheduled for whatever reason, production issues, you know.
Sure, the vagaries of doing this business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so maybe it comes out a month later and it, you know, while it was more weather appropriate a month ago, and now it's not so weather appropriate, and so that can have an effect on it. There's, you know, it can be fickle, and you, I guess you never quite know exactly which beer is going to be your most popular. You know, take for example, our triple IPA.
Yeah, Elevation.
Elevation, yeah. That beer, so when I originally put out our first list of beers, I had Redacted on it, which is our rye IPA.
Right.
And people kept saying to me, well, it's good, but when are you going to make something really hoppy? And so I was like,
that's like a dare.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus.
It's exactly what it was.
So fantastic.
So I heard that enough times where I said, okay, I'll go make something really hoppy.
All right, you want hoppy? Here it comes.
And I was like, I'm just going to blow this whole thing out of the water. I'm making 11% alcohol, making 100 plus IBUs.
Right.
And it was such an expensive beer to make. I was like, geez, I got to charge $6 for this beer. Nobody's going to buy this beer, but at least people will shut up after this, right?
Yeah.
Put it out and people loved it.
Yeah. Well, are you kidding
and
me?
Like, it's been basically our top seller ever since. So,
I mean, microbrew guys, by definition, if you're not like a Belgian freak, you know, you're probably going to be like a hophead. Most people, I would say.
Yeah, people love hops, definitely. Yeah.
Does it ever annoy you? This is something that bothers me because I don't know a lot about beer, but I'm a fan. I'm an enthusiast. And does it ever annoy you when you see something on a bottle that's like 250 IBUs? And you go, hey, it's not really measurable above 100? Really?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think it depends on how you choose to view it. You know, from my perspective, I go by the traditional scale, which is 0 to 100. So for our Elevation, we put 100+ because,
and I think that's fair.
You know, we're off the charts. Exactly where we are off the charts, I don't know. There is no chart beyond 100, right?
Right.
I mean, you can do theoretical calculations of IBUs and come up with those numbers of 250 or whatever. And you know, that's cool. I mean, you want to tell people it's super hoppy, you know, that's how you want to get your point across. That's cool.
That's one way to do it, I guess. I mean, it reminds me of The Simpsons, though, when I think Homer's tasting Flanders' five alarm chili.
Yeah.
And he goes, this is 2, maybe 2.5. So, I mean, it becomes a brand proposition at that point.
Yeah, you are kind of throwing it out there, you know, people are expecting their mouth to explode or something.
Right.
250 IBUs. Like, well, you know, it's kind of like what I say to people is I used to live in Phoenix, right?
Yeah.
And so people would say, oh man, it gets to 120 degrees there. Isn't that hot? I'm like, well, it's hot, but really anything over 100 is just hot. It pretty much all feels the same at that point.
Anything over 100 is going to be hoppy, is what you're saying.
Yeah. And it's kind of the same thing with IBUs. Anything over 100, it's just hoppy.
That's pretty damn hoppy.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about craft beer geeks here, do you have any opinion on, you know, people who use Untappd or Rate Beer or Beer Advocate? Do you look at those rankings, and does that affect you one way or the other?
I honestly don't really pay attention to them. I think it's great, you know, to get people involved in the community and for people to have that hobby. You know, I was definitely a beer geek before I started a brewery, and I didn't ever go on Rate Beer or anything like that.
Right.
It doesn't affect what I'm doing with my beer.
Okay.
You know? I mean, we're putting out the styles we want to put out. We're producing the beer we want to produce. I know, and we have enough internal quality control that I know we would never put out a beer with a defect. We're very cautious about that. You know, if you don't like it, if it's not to your taste, well, that's where I say, well, we're offensively delicious. You know, we don't care. We're not to everybody's taste.
Yeah.
That's not what we're here for.
Yeah, tough break. Try something else.
Try something else, yeah. But there's plenty of other craft breweries out there. Try one of theirs.
That's right. So in terms of that, I go on Untappd, and I like Untappd because it shows me what my friends are drinking, and
sure,
I get I know what their tastes are, so I get a sense for if I'm going to be more inclined to like something. I don't care if they dislike something unless there's something like really wrong with it,
right,
or, you know, if they use, like, I'm not huge on sour beers, which I know you're not either.
Right.
And so they'll rate sour beers. I go, okay, that's fine. There's got to be something really remarkable for me to want to get into that.
Yep.
But what kind of annoys me about that culture is some of the snobbery that happens
with
people. And when you talk about craft beer culture, Is there any particular flavor of beer geek that annoys you more than others?
That's a good question. I never thought about it that way. I'm not sure I have an answer to that, but I'll answer that question this way. So actually today I just put out a blog. It's something I've been doing more lately is blogging.
I saw that, yeah.
And
I read that right before I came over here, actually.
Yeah. And so, yeah, basically what I wrote about today was, you know, the people that have the snide remarks on social media, and yeah, they just have to say something, right?
Just something like shitty. Right?
Right. And, you know, that kind of thing definitely annoys me, and it really serves no purpose,
right,
other than to fuel that person's ego or, you know, whatever, right, give them an opportunity to voice their opinion to the world. But, and my basic point in the blog was,
and I'll link to that too. Just so,
okay, cool.
It'll go on the blog so that people can see it.
But basically, what I was saying is, you know, we make beer. We're not solving the world's problems here.
We're not trying to write energy policy.
Yeah, we make beer. It's a pretty non-controversial thing in the world. You know, it's here to, for your enjoyment. It's here to help you relax and have a good time. It's, you know, we're not doing anything that, we're not murdering puppies over here or anything.
No, you're not clubbing baby seals.
Yeah.
But one of the things you pointed out was people who you'll make an announcement about something like, I don't know, anything, you know, you're distributing in Nebraska or, right, you know, you're releasing a new Imperial Pilsner. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you pointed out in that letter was hashtag DGF,
yep,
right? Which
I didn't even know what that meant, by the way. I had to
guess. Is it don't give a fuck?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah.
So I saw that and I remember thinking, I'm like, why would you take, clearly if you don't give a fuck, just keep your mouth closed.
Right, why are you even reading it?
Yeah.
Go do something else.
And why are you weighing in with that comment?
Yeah.
If it gets no comments and no likes, clearly, like,
right,
the people have spoken here.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe you're just living in these people's heads rent free. I don't, because clearly they're motivated enough to say something and just, I don't know, cut you down that one level.
Right.
Which, I don't know, that's, you're part of a larger problem with social media.
Right. Yeah,
which,
absolutely.
I mean, or you're not part of it, you're a victim of it.
Yeah.
That I think a lot of people deal with, and that sucks.
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting is the comments I've been getting today on it are, you know, other small business owners that are saying, you know, hey, thanks for saying what all of us are thinking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think people are just tired of it. It's, you know, there's somewhat of that new culture and new attitude of, It's cool to not care about things.
Right.
It's cool to act like, you know, you don't have to work that hard or,
sure,
you know, and that's not the way I was raised. And that's not what I believe in.
Right.
And I think that's most people, you know. I mean, I watched my dad work extremely hard his whole life and I was taught to work very, very hard.
Yeah.
And I work my ass off for this business and I care
100-hour weeks for, yep, how long, right?
And I care very much about it. And, you know, there are a lot of things that I care about and I'm not afraid to say that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the more people would stand up and actually care about something and contribute to something, it'd be a better world rather than just having negative comments on social media.
Yeah, then just weighing in with your own shitty little voice, just with, you know, with one little snarky comment. Dude, put that to something productive.
Right.
Yeah, I very much agree with you. I just want to close the loop on this because it's something I think about a lot. The type of beer geek that annoys me is the style snob. The people who either, like, just shit on craft lagers out of, you know, by category.
Yeah.
Or, you know, people who, you know, I only drink IPAs, I only drink stouts, whatever. Man,
yep.
I want to go to a brewery and say, hey, what do you guys do best?
Right.
Just give it to me.
Yep.
Like, I'm not a huge fan of brown ales.
Yep.
But I had one from Smutty Nose with my wife. It came in, we're like members of the Craft Beer of the Month thing where they like send beer to your house, which is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
And their brown ale was fantastic. And I go, I'm glad I'm not just like closed off to this.
Right.
And so if you're limiting yourself and you go, no, I only like this style, you go, man, what are you missing?
Yep.
And that just bugs me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if you're going to be part of craft beer, you have to be open to trying anything.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, I'm like you, you know, typically I'm not a maltier drinker, as you can probably tell by Renegade Styles.
Right.
I got a hold of Upslopes Brown Ale, and I had three of those suckers down before I knew what happened. I was like, man, that is a good beer.
Yeah, no, that's all right. They do a good job. You mentioned you work hard. And I want to touch on the Budweiser ad because clearly their beer is brewed the hard way.
Absolutely.
Which
we're just screwing around over here in craft beer.
that was probably to me the most galling part of that ad. Yeah. I mean, everything else, it's like politics. They're sort of riling up the base.
Absolutely.
I think, which is fine. And they can do whatever they want, but brewed the hard way. Get out of town with that.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt that their employees work hard and I'm sure they all do great work. But seriously, brewed the hard way?
Yep.
Dude, get fucked.
Yeah.
And when you saw that ad, were you sort of immediately compelled to write something? Or what was the process like for you to put that out there? Because it gained a lot of traction.
It did. It had a much bigger response than I'd planned. But yeah, it was pretty immediate for me. When I saw it, I'd kind of already been thinking about... some of those thoughts were already on my mind just because of the buyouts of Elysian and 10 Barrel Brewing that had happened very recent prior to that.
Right before that ad.
Right before that. And then that ad came out and it was kind of like, all right, now I've got something to say.
Yeah.
It
just crystallized for you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything came into focus and it was just like, now I know what's been bothering me and I know what I need to say to people to let them understand this from the craft brewery owner's perspective. And it was very well received, and which was great just to see that, you know, just to have that outpouring of support for craft beer it was really a cool thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's huge. And I saw recently somewhere in the news, it might have even been Kyle Clark, who's like a huge craft beer guy.
Yeah.
And for like a prominent local news guy to sort of wear that on his sleeve is really cool.
It is cool.
And I like when he talks about it and he does a whole thing before the GABF. But I think it was him who mentioned that craft beer is now finally 10% of overall beer sales.
Yeah, we're actually 11% by volume. Nice. Yeah, that just came out of the Brewers Association.
That's mind-blowing to me, number one, that... it's growing at the rate that it's growing because, I mean, just a year or two ago, it was, what, 8%?
Yeah.
And so for that type of gain, to gain by, you know, like 35% or whatever that is, that's massive.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I'm equally amazed by the fact that it's still only 11%.
It is only 11%. And I'll tell you this. If this one statistic will tell you why craft brewers brewed the hard way.
Okay.
We're 11% of the market by volume.
Right.
We provide 60% of the jobs in the beer industry.
Holy shit.
And because Bud Miller Coors is so automated that it just doesn't require that many people to run their breweries. And in craft beer, everything's done by hand. It's very manual. So,
and that's got to blow your margins too then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wow.
Absolutely. But we provide a lot of jobs. Yeah. And they're good jobs and they're good places to work. They're good work environments. And, you know, I think that's as much of the story of craft beer as it is the beer itself, because, you know, we have brought manufacturing back to the United States, something that was slipping outside of our borders more and more, and we're providing jobs with it, which is huge. And I think people need to know that story.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, you're certainly helping to tell it. How far and why was the reaction that you heard about to your letter?
Gosh, far.
like beyond the state or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, cool.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I had people, you know, friends across the country and distributors that we work with in other states and things like that, you know, getting in touch with me and saying, hey, great letter, like the... really enjoyed reading that. And it was just the reaction that I heard for, it was, you know, every conversation I had with people in the industry for a couple weeks after that was, hey, really enjoyed the letter, you know? So it was cool.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
So obviously I don't want you to share what Renegade's exit strategy is or your exit strategy, but you called attention to it just as we were talking about it, but you know, you said every brewer needs an exit strategy and you're frustrated with the buyouts. What are some of the other options for exit strategies as you see them then?
You know, I think New Belgium and Left Hand is moving this direction too, of turning their companies over to employee owned. I think that's a great option if you're able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of different ways out. And, you know, not you look at Sierra Nevada, he's turning it over to his children.
Right.
Not everybody has that option. Right. If you do, that's great. If you can keep it in the family.
Sure.
But if you can't, you know, I think there are other options like employee-owned companies or even selling it to somebody else independent to take it over and run it.
Sure.
You know, craft beer is a hot market. There are a lot of people that are interested in getting in, and you don't have to necessarily go to AB to get out. There are other people that are willing to buy.
Sure. In terms of your growth, we're at an interesting point in craft brewing because you've got some of the pioneers starting to get much larger.
Yep. You
know, Sam Adams, Boston Beer Company, you know, New Belgium, Sierra Nevada, you alluded to. Let's say all of a sudden Renegade takes off.
Sure.
Gets huge, becomes, you know, one of the large micros, and all of a sudden Renegade's beer is sweeping the nation. What does the model look like for you at that point? And how, you know, how do you sort of balance what you said and keep this ethos of, you know, independently owned as you scale up immensely and start dealing with national distribution networks and things like that?
That's a great question. I think that's certainly a very large challenge for some of these larger breweries. And I'm not sure that it's a challenge I want to face. I'm not sure that we'll ever get that large. I have my sights set on 20,000 barrels right now.
Okay.
And, you know, when we get there, you know, and I've been very open with my staff about this. When we get there, I don't know. We'll see what happens, you know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we just kind of hang out in that 20 to 30,000 barrel range. You know, you look at...
Because where are you at right now?
This year we'll do about 3,200 barrels.
Okay.
You know,
so that's still a fairly tall mountain here.
Yeah. It's a lot of growth.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, you look at... take Russian River, for example, right?
Yeah.
Very well-respected brewery.
Pliny.
I mean, been around for years and years and years. Those guys do like 12 to 13,000 barrels a year.
Shit, okay.
You know, I mean, they seem huge, but they're not.
Right.
You know, and I think that's been a conscious choice on their part. Obviously, because their beer is great, and they could sell a heck of a lot more of it if they wanted to. But but I think they want to maintain that smaller company culture. And to an extent, I kind of do too. You know, I'm not sure that I want to get to be a one of the largest craft brewers in the country.
Right.
You know, of course, never say never. I mean, maybe we hit 20,000 barrels, and I say, fuck yeah, we're 250,000 barrels. You know, I don't.
Sky's the limit, bitch.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, and it's hard to say. I'm not in their shoes. I'm sure that is a big challenge.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that's kind of the path that we're on right now.
Well, kind of a related question. I mean, you guys are fully distributed in Kansas now, which is cool, which, you know, you're growing beyond Colorado's borders. And then you recently announced you're going into Nebraska too.
Yes.
In terms of something you said earlier with regard to, you know, you're friendly with all the local brewers here, how does your approach differ as you enter new markets? Because here, you know, it's like we're your neighborhood brewery, come down to Santa Fe, come to our tap house. And then you go into new markets where, you know, people may not have that same connection that they would have here. How does that alter your approach?
It does slightly, but not that much. Honestly, the reason that we chose Kansas and Nebraska is because those states have a close connection with Colorado.
Okay.
You know, people from Kansas and Nebraska frequently visit Colorado to go skiing or come out here in the summertime and, you know, whatever, you know, everybody's drawn to the mountains and, it's really not that far away. It's not that far of a drive. And so I think, you know, there are some great breweries in those states, but they don't have the concentration of breweries that we have in our state. And so, they're a lot more accepting of out of state breweries, especially breweries that come from Colorado.
Right.
Because we are a very close neighboring state, and I think although we can't make the hometown I'm right down the street argument, we can certainly say, you know, we're not that far away. And yeah. You know, I think it's about whatever market you're in, I think it's about showing that you care about the market and investing time there and, you know, taking part in their festivals and taking part in their beer culture.
Right. Integrating yourself in the community, basically.
Absolutely, and doing what you can to build their beer culture and being a part of that and not just being there to take advantage of it. And I think that's, you know, that's our approach, is to be a contributor and not just come in and take sales away.
Yeah, yeah. So not just come in and be like, hey, buy this. All right, see you later.
Right.
Yeah, I gotcha. So every year in the legislature, and I deal with government relations in my day job a bit, one of the things you always see is a push by grocery stores and convenience stores to sell full-strength beer.
Yep.
And Colorado is sort of uniquely situated in that regard. And I know how you feel about this, but I'm going to ask it as if I don't know what the answer is.
Sure.
In your estimation, would it be beneficial to have full-strength beer in liquor stores and convenience stores, and why or why not?
I think you mean full-strength beer in grocery and convenience stores.
Yes, what did I say?
You said liquor stores.
Yes, no. Stores. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant grocery stores and convenience stores.
Yes. No, it would not be beneficial. And I think that surprises a lot of people to hear that, because I think people's first instinct is, why not? It's more stores that you could sell out of.
Yeah, that's easier, right?
But, you know, the fact of the matter is that a grocery store is a grocery store. It's not a liquor store. And right. So they have a very small section that is allotted for beer. And who's going to get that section? Well, the macros are going to get most of it. And then whatever craft does get in there is going to be the large craft breweries that can supply their entire chain, because they only want to deal with the smallest number of suppliers that they can.
Yeah.
And Renegade Brewing Company, guess what? We can't supply the entire chain.
No.
So we kind of become a nuisance, you know?
Right.
Oh, you're
like the fly in the ointment.
Yeah. Oh, you want to sell, you know, 1,000 barrels through our stores? Psh, that's nothing.
Yeah, please. You
know? So it's going to reduce the options for choice. And then people say, well, no, because the liquor stores will still be there. Well, will they if people stop going there to buy? You know, if it's more convenient to pick up your six-pack with your groceries, sales are certainly going to drop at the local mom-and-pop shops.
Which, if you go to any sort of strip mall, there's a grocery store, and then, like, three stores down, there's, like, a liquor store.
Yes.
Just because that's the way it works in Colorado.
Absolutely. And those stores that are anchor stores for the grocery stores will suffer the most.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are family businesses. They've been in families for generations. And these are hardworking Coloradans that live here and they spend their money here. You know, I mean, if we start spending our money with all the chain stores, then that money starts to go outside Colorado.
And, that's true.
And people who have jobs here and own businesses here soon won't. And that's just not good for our state.
No, and it's a quirk of the law in that I remember this only, you know, like one person can only own one liquor store, like per person or per family or however it works, right?
Right.
And the weird byproduct of that is I would say that has really facilitated craft beer's growth here, because you guys can go out and sell your product one liquor store at a time, and you're not trying to get into a huge distribution channel, which is its own sort of weird set of bureaucracy and a very tough mountain to climb.
It is. It's very different when the decisions are made on a corporate level versus me walking into a store and saying, hey, I own Renegade Brewing Company. And they say, hey, I own this liquor store. and I go, cool. My brewery's 5 miles from here. Do you want to carry my beer? Yeah, definitely I do. Yeah, okay. We shake hands and then the beer goes on the shelf. Easy peasy, right?
Yeah. Can you carve out a little bit of shelf space for me?
Yeah. It doesn't work that way on a corporate level, you know, and then now it involves flying out to their office and giving a presentation and, you know, going through data analysis, and it's just a lot more complex. And it's not to say that there won't be beer on the shelves, because there will.
Yeah, of course.
But it won't be the same. and a lot of liquor stores and small breweries will really suffer.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of back when you could actually, as a band, sell CDs and, you know, hope to make money doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could go to the local independent record store and be like, hey, here's five copies of my CD.
Right.
Hope it sells, you know, and then show up a while later and pick up your money for the CDs that were sold. It was a model that bands used to, you know, get their name out there. When you bring in chains, you know, you can't just show up. Like
right.
Most 7-Elevens, just for instance, are, you know, franchised and, or wait a minute. Basically what I'm saying is, you know, their decisions about what goes on their shelves is not made by them.
Right.
So anyway, I'm not into having that, having full strength beer in grocery stores and convenience stores. It's always funny to me though, when like, if you're up in Vail or Aspen or something and you'll see people buying that just because they come from somewhere else and
right.
you go, oh boy, that's going to be 3-2.
Yeah. And,
although you're at altitude, maybe that'll help.
Yes. That's all. Yeah. That may be all you need, right?
Yeah. Who knows, but whatever. Are there any styles that you haven't brewed yet that you'd like to tackle?
Yes. So we actually have a really fun project coming up. I'm a big smoked beer fan, and our lead brewer, Max, is a big smoked beer fan. And we haven't done a smoked beer yet.
Okay.
And so we are actually working on a partnership with a barbecue restaurant.
Oh, nice.
We're going to go down and smoke our own malt in their smoker and do a smoked beer with it, and then have that beer on tap at in our tap room and at their restaurant exclusively. And so, yeah, that's one. It's kind of been on my list. I know it won't be a super popular style. You know, there aren't a ton of smoked beer fans out there, but
right.
But it's just something that I want to do for my own personal enjoyment.
Hey, and you know, as the head guy, you can do that.
I can do that.
That's right. So
as long as I make other stuff that makes money and I keep the lights on, then, you know.
Yeah, that's true. You can create your own little sandbox from time to time. That's
mm-hmm.
cool. I'm not a huge smoked beer guy, but there's one at Station 26, which I live over in Park Hill, and that's my neighborhood brewery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the Cherrywood smoked, I want to say porter. I hope I don't get it wrong, but that's really good.
Nice. I haven't had that one. I've had a few beers from them. They make really good beers, but I haven't had their smoked beer.
Yeah, they're cool guys. They got a great patio too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. In an old firehouse. It's such a cool spot they have there.
Yeah, and if you notice the wall, it's all like fire hoses.
Yeah.
And then where you, like, if you're a woman, you, or anyone who has a bag, I guess, underneath it's like nozzles. Like, that's where you hang
cool.
your stuff, like
nice.
Under the bar. Yeah. So. But one last thing I wanted to ask you about was, we're recording this on a Thursday, and I saw again on your Facebook page, you invited people down to your tap room. Something was being filmed.
Right.
Can you give up any details about that, or is that something you need to keep hush hush?
I'm not allowed, they're not letting me say what it's specifically for at this point, but I can say that it's a travel show.
Nice.
And so they have come to Denver to film at a few different restaurants and bars, venues, whatever, and our brewery. So,
and I'm assuming you can't say who's doing it or where it's airing, but is there an approximate timeline for when that
should air this summer, July, they're saying.
Okay.
It'll be out. And so we'll be able to release more details as we get closer to it.
Very good. Well, yep. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's super exciting.
How'd it go this morning?
Great. Yeah, I mean,
the weather didn't entirely cooperate, but
yeah, you know what, it's fine. We're inside brewing beer.
Right.
But you know, I spoke with them yesterday, and they said, well, we want to come down and film at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it'd be great if you could have some people there in your tap room. And I'm like, okay, well, it's 10 o'clock in the morning.
On a Thursday.
On a Thursday. Yeah, if this was Saturday, sure, but, you know, people work.
Allegedly.
Yeah. So.
Did you get it filled though?
Yeah, it was great. So we put the word out on Facebook that we were filming, and you know, we gave everybody a couple free beers to come down and drink before lunch, and we had a good crowd down there. It was fun.
Well, you know what? It happens to coincide with March Madness. People are probably drinking during the day anyway.
You know, that's true. Yeah,
maybe superlative timing. Who knows?
That's right. Yeah.
So, well, Brian, I'll tell you what, this was an enormous pleasure. I loved getting the chance to pick your brain a little bit and ask you some questions.
Yeah. Thanks for interviewing me.
Yeah, of course. So this is the time when we plug stuff. So if you want to plug when the tap room's open, where to find you on Facebook, on your website, anything you want to plug, do it now.
Yeah, absolutely. So our tap room is open 7 days a week. It's located at 925 West 9th Avenue and at our production facility at 918 West 1st Avenue. We have tours Friday afternoons and Saturday afternoons. And that's a smoking deal. $5 gets you 2 beers, a pint glass to take home, and discounts on our canned beers, plus a tour, a very informative and fun tour of our production facility. So come check that stuff out. We always have tons of events going on, and those are always up on our Facebook page. So
just search Renegade Brewing
Just
Company.
Search Renegade Brewing Company, and you will find us.
Awesome, man. Well, I love your guys' beer. I love your business model, and I just wish you the most success.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That wraps up episode 53 of the John of All Trades podcast with Brian O'Connell, the founder of Renegade Brewing Company. Head down to Renegade. He gave you the address. He gave you the website, but here it is once more. Go to renegadebrewing.com. Search on Facebook for Renegade Brewing and check out their entire excellent array of offensively delicious beers. I'll say it again. The Imperial Pilsner is outstanding. I drank a bunch of that. I drank the Concilium while I was sitting there with Brian. Also excellent. You cannot go wrong at Renegade. They will have something for you that you enjoy. So head down there. Go check out some beers and get involved in the craft brew community. It is, after all, Colorado Craft Beer Week, so help celebrate it. Spread the word about the John of All Trades podcast. Share it on Facebook, share it on Twitter, JOAT Pod for both. And while you're at it, pay some love to our sponsor, 4Degrees, number 4, DEGRE.ES, your one-stop shop for all your online communications needs. Search engine optimization, website building, grassroots coalition building, anything that you could possibly need if you're doing business online, they will help you do it better. So, number 4, DEGRE.ES. I'm out of here for this week. I'm going to go celebrate Colorado Craft Beer Week with a few brews, and I suggest you do the same. Then on Monday, come back here as we announce new episodes. The episode then will premiere on Wednesdays. We got fresh content for you every week. So, until then, say goodnight, Gracie.